Hi, JP.
Hello. How are you today?
Doing well. I was 3% annoyed hearing Stephen Vogt being like, this is why we got to stick to what we're doing.
Vogt just stinks at these press conferences. Can we just all acknowledge that? I've listened to too many of them. I've paid way too close of attention to him. He just never knows the right note to hit.
That's kind of apropos considering his managerial moves last night late in that game.
He doesn't understand. I've never seen a manager not know how to read the room worse than Stephen Vogt.
Well, okay. It's part of that just that he's so infectiously.
It worked. Go
positive
with it. It worked.
That it basically, it just annoyed all of us.
But I didn't see this type of positivity last year in a weird way. Like this year, he's ramped it up to a million.
Oh, is he trying too hard? That's actually not a bad take.
I think so. But it's like, you know, we've had some interesting head coaches in this city. You know, we've had a lot of them. Like, for instance, I always thought that Hugh Jackson, there's nothing he loved more than just completely lying about his time with Oakland, you know, and like just and
later
reinventing.
Cleveland, too.
He turned 8-8 into 14-2 quicker than any coach I've ever seen in my life, right? Greg Williams, in many ways, was very similar to Freddie Kitchens in the idea that anytime they got in front of a mic, it was just story time.
And
it was fun. Like it was fun. You weren't getting anything of usefulness or anything, but it was like a 20-minute football lesson with funny ha-has and stories the whole entire
Jim
way.
Jim Schwartz too, by the way, just while we're at it.
Yeah, and then there's Vogt, who just takes every press conference to rah-rah about the team and then completely not understand the moment at all.
I don't know who needed that win last night in the specific way it happened, where you jump out to a big lead and then this
happens. It was almost disaster. Yeah,
It was like
you blow the big lead.
It was like watching the Titanic almost hit three icebergs just to have it. Oh, we just missed it. Oh, thank God, Jack. You don't have to go on a float, right? Inevitably, though, there's the Guardians side of this, which is you needed that for your psyche, mm-hmm. And then there's the Guardians fans part of this. That would be melting down on Stephen Vogt if they had lost that game with the way he handled the substitutions late in the game, and where it was just another very winnable game. Like you had ace level Tanner Bibee until you didn't. Then the bullpen stuff came in. You got bad Gattis. You pinch hit Nolan Jones when he had two hits on the day and was actually looking great. Like, the vibes were good, and then the manager almost kills it.
You scored on one of the best pitchers in baseball. Hunter Brown has been fantastic.
After you were, like, in a position to beat Tarek Skubal a week ago. Now, you didn't have a great offensive game, but
Sunday,
you were still up
a couple days ago.
It's like, what the hell are we doing here? But I think Guardians fans needed it more than the Guardians.
I don't know. I'd love to play along with you and tell you the Guardians fans needed that one. It was very ho-hum after the win, I thought. I was texting with a couple buddies, and there was excitement, don't get me wrong, as I was sending the baseball savant how many parks would this be a home run in, and it's just one. It was just one for last night. And instantly, that's where my brain went, because I spent a lot of time in Houston. I know that ballpark well. There's oftentimes home runs that are just that only park, and that's it. But I don't know. I'm worried that the losses, the 10 straight losses, did so much damage that the two wins felt bigger to the Guardians than the Guardians fans.
Oh, I don't know. The relief I felt the last two days.
Like, you saw Rocchio and his platinum hair running out of the dugout looking like he was like like his first Little League game, like so excited, like just bringing the energy. Kwan is the excitement for Martinez as the hit happens. Like, it felt like the players needed that one, Nick.
My best friend since we were kids, Nate, might actually be one of the few people I will classify as a bigger Guardians fan than me. He does not live locally. He is in the service, and every day every week we text about the Guardians. And when Rocchio hit the home run last night, it was, man, he just doesn't want to go back to AAA. And I was like, they got you back. They got you back before the win. And some of the texts they sent after the game started going sideways were... It was mushroom cloud laying mother kind of frustration with where they were. So there's who needed the win more last night? The Guardians locker room, the Guardians fans.
Yeah.
I will allow one subcategory here, which is Stephen Vogt. Because that was...
Well, Vogt would have got crushed if they had lost that
game. He should still be crushed.
And he probably will. 3 o'clock hour. Pay attention. We'll talk a lot more Guardians and crushing Vogt at that point. Like, but he would be eviscerated today if it had gone poorly.
Like, we're to the point where the worst thing I can say is if you're in a losing streak or if you're just coming out of a losing streak, your job as a manager is to, thou shalt not harm. It's the Hippocratic Oath. All right? You just don't do too much. All right? Let the players feel it out. Let the players earn their sea legs again. And last night, I mean, between the bullpen and the lineup, he did everything you could have done to lose that game. And I honestly think if you lose that game, given it would have been 11 out of 12 games that you took a loss, it would have been the turning point for some Guardians fans, and the honeymoon would officially be over with Steven Vogt.
Well, he went to Festa when the game mattered. He went to Gattis when the game mattered. And then even in the ninth there when you had Junis on the mound, and it's like, wait a second, how did you come up with this lineup of suck from the bullpen? Like, these are exactly the guys we don't want to see out there right now.
216-474-0092. Who needed that win more? Guardians fans, or Steven Vogt? We dare say they've got a chance to sweep the Astros and then four games against the White Sox before closing out the first half of the season. But from optimism there to optimism with the Browns, The analytics favor the Cleveland Browns, believe it or not. You and I have talked about this season as a, let's say, a take-your-medicine kind of year.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Damon Wolf, in the Twitter handle there is at NFL In Motion. He's founder of In Motion Football. He put out what his model is saying about the next 3 years for the Cleveland Browns, and saying that after this year, he has the Browns pivoting away from a rebuild and contending. This year, he has the Browns as a 7-win team. Next year, he has them as a 10-win team, and then a 12-win team in 2027.
What are his analytics? What is his model? I'd love to know what he's using to get this.
I believe it's a proprietary thing.
Okay. Yeah. That sounds a little fugazi to me.
I don't know the ins and outs. Okay. I think it starts in an Excel spreadsheet.
You're gonna reference this for the next 3 years. I need to be able to at least find out like the foundation from it, because you just used it as a broad sweeping term of analytics. Yeah, and it's like, I want to know a little bit
you
more.
You ready for it?
Yeah.
The FV triangle is a 12-layer evaluation.
Things.
I'm reading it.
He no, might I know. Do that guy it. Is just making up things is what I'm saying.
Evaluation framework that powers the franchise valuation score, a predictive health rating.
Sounds like it was made up from AI.
It might be, actually. Or Damon might just be AI. He's very good, though. A predictive health... I realize what I said. For every NFL team, it's a modern football framework designed to measure the true structural health and three-year outlook of teams by blending analytics, scouting principles, and front office strategy.
Shouldn't the thing I would argue on this, if we're just taking it for face value, which we should in this scenario... So the analytical team, one of the most analytical teams in the sport, is favored by what it is in the analytics. Like, that shouldn't surprise anybody. The problem we've had with the Browns over the past couple years, in really the whole stretch that Dee Podesta has been there, is they've swerved so hard into the analytics when football is just obviously about more than just the analytics.
I think
that's
fair.
They don't
fair.
Touch on the football part of this.
So what I think is fair to say is an analytical model favors the most foremost analytical team in football. Color me shocked.
Exactly.
So I think that's a fair point to make. I don't know what's more sunshiny, 7 wins this year or 10 wins next year.
Well, when you don't know who the quarterback is going to be, is how I find it so amazing that all of a sudden you go from 10 wins to 12 wins. Like, there's an assumption there that you get the quarterback right, and that's an assumption the Browns since 1999 can't play with.
So what I will give credit for, and again, guys, if you haven't seen this, at NFL In Motion, Damon has a couple graphics out there that are super easy to use, and this is certainly a way of thinking of the Browns. So in fairness, in the tier, so there's tiers to which team you're whatever.
Yeah.
The tier is mid. It's 17 out of 32. But still, somehow, if we said right now the Browns' future, the health evaluation of the next 3 years is 17 out of 32, I think a fair amount of Browns fans would sign up, because it feels like they're 31 out of 32 or 32 out of 32.
Well, especially if year two and year three are going to be better than what 17 out of 32 is, essentially, because year two and year three is a 10-win team and a 12-win team. That seems pretty good. Everyone listening right now that's a Browns fan would sign up for a 10-win year next year and a 12-win year the win after.
With a rookie quarterback. Now, for something sure. You will like is his model expects Shador to become the starter soon,
well,
and projects him well enough in the Browns offense to question taking a quarterback early in the 2026 draft.
I like that we had some nuance to the analytical model there. It gave some reasoning attached to that.
You want to hear the strengths and weaknesses of what they think the Browns are?
Sure, and I would not be shocked with many bits of this because I think what the Browns have done this last offseason in some ways has been positive. But all right, let's hear it.
Strengths, defensive line, 2025 class.
Yeah.
Analytics usage.
Analytical model is giving them credit for their analytics usage.
As soon as I said it. Future draft capital and play callers.
Mac looks disgusted. That might just be his face today, though. I don't know.
He might still be thinking about our WNBA discussion 2 days ago.
Oh, no. Did I lose my lead analyst role?
No, not him. No.
If anything,
no.
It cemented it for you.
Yeah. Weaknesses, aging offensive line, quarterback uncertainty, future dead money on cap, NFLPA grades, and wide receiver depth.
I would punish him for the NFLPA grades.
Yeah. Which one carries less water for you? NFLPA grades in the negative or analytics usage in under strengths?
I think the analytics usage under strengths.
It's a little bit at sniffing your own fart there.
Well, it is the hat on the hat thing that you talk about all the time, right? That is that. It shouldn't surprise anybody. Again, this is the problem I have with the Browns over the previous few years. I don't hate the idea that DePodesta was trying to find a way to zig when everyone else was zagging. Problem is a couplefold. One, we have not seen the zags be nearly as pronounced as I thought it would be. Like in baseball, it was obvious. What he did with Moneyball, the zag was obvious for everyone to see, and he was catching up on trends before they were actually trends. We haven't really seen that from the Browns. Or if they've attempted to do some of that, then it hasn't worked out, and then they've closed up shop, and that just is what it is.
So the thing that I will give this organization credit for is there have not been a lot of illogical things. Meaning, like, in the moment, you understand what they're trying to do. The problem has been they haven't pulled it off. And that's what makes this organization the hardest to analyze, is I give you credit for thinking logically and for displaying your message logically. As logical as anything as I've seen since 1999, where sometimes it's we're football guys, shut up, we know what we're doing. So I give them credit for that. But you can't then go around and go, well, okay, but the results aren't what the results should be.
Yeah.
In an NFL, by the way, where the whole thing is set up for you to have parity and to have more success than you've had if you're doing things the logical way.
Yeah, I think there's a missing element to the Browns, and it has been for years, and that is the human element and the people side of things. And I feel like that's where they just sometimes miss. And that I do think is something we can put on Stefanski and what he's tried to build there, where it just feels like he doesn't have a sense of people most of the time, and he just doesn't seem to know what they want in any given moment. You know me, I like analytics, I like numbers, I like all that stuff. This sounds very like meathead 1995 sports radio for me, but the reality is they miss on the parts that are outside of the analytics. They get the analytics right, but football is just so much more than that.
We're going to continue on with this, guys. We've got Al Pawlowski, Guardians TV. At 3, we'll talk about, all right, who needed that more last night? Guardians fans, Guardians players, or Stephen Vogt himself? 420, James Rapine, Locked On Bengals, as we take a look ahead with training camp coming up in a couple weeks. Probably also have a conversation about why Joe Burrow is overrated. George Sedano, ESPN LA, ESPN NBA, he joins us at 520. We'll talk about the Cavs' outlook going forward. But I'm really interested to hear how the LeBron stuff is playing in LA. And ultimately, what's the whole damn point there? If you are LeBron, what are you trying to get out of this? But 216-474-0092, at Nick Wilson says, at Jay Peterlin on social media reactions on X, powered by Scheiben Jewelers. When do you expect the Browns to be good again, and their strength is the Browns' weakness, and vice versa? That's in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.